are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Tuesday, everybody. The Timberwolves fell to the Oklahoma City Thunder on Monday night at Target Center by 13 points in what was hopefully the final game without Karl-Anthony Towns at their disposal. He missed his, 14th consecutive game, this time due to illness. Saturday was kind of a combo of illness and recovering from knee sprain. Apparently on Monday, it sounded like he only missed the game because of illness, and I guess that means there's a real chance he's back Wednesday against the Pacers. Of course, Wiggins actually had the flu a couple weeks ago and he was sick and he missed four games. So fingers crossed it isn't anything quite that serious, but he was questionable. So perhaps he will play on Wednesday. But at any rate, when it comes to the Thunder game, the Wolves struggled to defend or rebound in this game. It was ultimately their downfall. We're going to spend a few minutes breaking that game down. And then we'll take a look at individual studs and duds, as we always do, who played best individually for the Wolves and who struggled the most. And then finally, we'll cover a bit more Robert Covington trade talk, as there's been a couple of other, not so much direct rumors as just kind of discussions surrounding Roko and what his trade prospects might be. All right, let's go ahead and jump into Wolves Thunder. The Wolves were mostly competitive in the first half. They actually led 33-30 after the first quarter. Played pretty well early on. Andrew Wiggins actually had a strong start to the game. Spoiler alert, that didn't go well in the second half. I think he only had 2 points after the first quarter. But he had a strong start to the game. He looked like he was going to be aggressive. The Wolves shot the ball well enough. They were active. They were up 33-30. Second quarter didn't go quite as well, but they were, again, still competitive. They were within 3 points at halftime and looked like they would be in the game. However, once things got to the third quarter, things went downhill fairly quickly. Jeff Teague had a terrible third quarter stint, was a big part of the issues that happened. He ended up a positive plus minus for the game, but his third quarter stint was dubious, to say the least. There was some poor transition play. He had some bad defense, a bad turnover. The Wolves shot selection became kind of haphazard in terms of attempting three-pointers. They weren't driving to the basket nearly as much, and that goes for Wiggins. It goes for, even Jarrett Culver, who had a pretty good game. All the guys who need to be driving to the hoop as much as possible weren't doing that. The biggest issue was defensively, and this is throughout the game, and then also rebounding. And that was the biggest problem with the third quarter. The Wolves actually trailed by as many as 18 at one point before a quick 9-1 run, a couple three-pointers from Naz Reid, who finished with a career-high 20 points. And that kept them within shouting distance for most of the fourth quarter. The Wolves were pretty much down by double digits for all the fourth quarter, but they were within, again, kind of within striking distance, hovering around that 10-13 point mark in terms of deficit before the Thunder pulled away late in the game, got up by, 16 or 17, and ultimately won by 13. As mentioned, the biggest issues in this game, the Wolves just didn't rebound the ball when they needed to. They finished the game, or really at all, they finished the game with 37 rebounds compared to the Thunder's 51 rebounds in this game. Steven Adams had 11. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had a career-high 20 rebounds. He had a triple-double in this game, 20 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists in 36 minutes. He was 8 of 12 from the field, was a game-high plus 23, was just fantastic, and the Wolves could not slow him down. Wiggins was mostly guarding Terrence Ferguson for a stretch in the first half, but he had a turn guarding Gilgeous-Alexander. The Wolves were mostly matching up Covington with Gallinari and a little bit of Chris Paul. Basically, it was just whoever the Wolves had in Gilgeous-Alexander that was getting torched, and nobody could keep him off the glass. 20 rebounds from SGA in 36 minutes is crazy. The Wolves didn't have a single player with more than 5 rebounds in this game, which is just awful. They had 3 guys that had 5, Shabazz Napier, Jarrett Culver, and Josh Okogie. So, yeah, none of them are big guys. They're all wings and point guards. No big guys with more than 5 rebounds. Gorgie had 4, and Naz Reid had 1 single rebound in 18 minutes. Noah Vonleh had 2 in 12 minutes, and Robert Covington had only 4 in 30 minutes. So, disappointing rebounding effort for the Wolves, disappointing perimeter defense, and that was ultimately their downfall. Most of that damage was done in the third quarter, and then early in the fourth quarter was also a real struggle for the Wolves. there isn't really much else to say about this game positively for the Timberwolves. They shot the ball okay from outside the arc. I mean, I guess a little better than their season average. 12 of 35 for 34, just 30, a little over 34%. 4 of 9 was from Covington, 4 of 8 from Reed, 3 of 5 from Napier. The rest of the team was not good. Gorgie was 1 of 3, Wiggins 0 of 3, Culver 0 of 2. So the rest of the starting lineup outside of Napier and Covington combined to shoot 1 of 8 from beyond the arc, and the rest of the bench outside of Reed combined to shoot 0 of 5 from beyond the arc. So that's a 1 for 13 among all players not named Naz Reed, Robert Covington, or Shabazz Napier in this game, which, I mean, sure, those three guys might have been the best shooters on the court for the Wolves in this game, but the rest of those guys have to make more than one three if the Wolves are going to shoot 35-plus threes a game. The Thunder, by contrast, were 12 of 30. That's 40%. Also, free throw shooting continues to be an issue. Minnesota, 76% from the line to the Thunder's 89%, 88.5%. So they didn't just do enough. They just didn't do enough in this game to win. Chris Paul didn't even score until the third quarter and finished with just 10 points, 3 assists, 4 rebounds. The biggest issue was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They also allowed efficient games to Ferguson, who shot 5 of 7, and Danilo Gallinari had 30 points. He only had 4 rebounds, but he had 30 points, 8 of 12 shooting. He made 3 threes on 4 attempts and 11 of 12 from the free throw line. So regardless of what the Wolves did, they couldn't slow down the Thunder at all. Adams had 13 and 11 with 5 assists too. So really, the three best players not named Chris Paul did a ton of damage, and the Wolves just didn't have an answer. The defense wasn't where it needed to be in this game. All right, next up, we're going to talk a little bit about studs and duds. We're going to talk about who played their best game for the Wolves, who played the worst game. There's a couple that are, we're going to give half studs in this particular game. It was just kind of a, you know, the defense was so bad, it's hard to, and the rebounding, it's hard to reward too many guys with one of our three stars of the game awards. So we'll get into that here in a moment. We generally try and award three stars of the game for the Wolves, or studs, if you will. We still came up with three here. We're gonna say two full stars and a couple of half stars. Jarrett Culver was probably the best all around player for the Wolves in this one, which has been happening more often than it probably should be lately, and great for his development. But that's usually not a good sign for the Wolves winning games if Jarrett Culver is their best player on the floor at this stage in his career. No offense to Jarrett, but you know, guys like Andrew Wiggins have to step up. Guys like Karl-Anthony Towns need to get on the floor and then step up. So, but Culver finished this one with 14 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. He was 7 of 15 shooting. He was active on both ends of the floor once again. He had the best plus minus any of the starters. He was a minus 6 in 32 minutes. He had played the most minutes of any Timberwolf as well. Was active defensively, even if the Wolves struggled there. And given the number of minutes he played and his assignments on defense, it would have been really good to see him grab more than 5 rebounds. That said, still a solid game from Culver, still efficient from the field. Awesome to see him getting to the rim. He didn't settle for, I don't think he shot any non-paint twos, and he typically doesn't. But he also only attempted 2 threes. And if memory serves, they were both open attempts and they made sense. There was one late in the game when they were trailing, needed a 3, and he was open. So, I mean, shot selection continues to improve for Culver. So as long as the activity level stays where it has been, the defense continues to be solid, and the shot selection continues to improve. I mean, Culver's making a pretty significant turnaround in the middle of the season during a stretch when the Wolves haven't played very well. So that's really positive to see. Here's hoping he continues his offensive activity, his willingness to cut to the rim, and his, I guess, judicious shot selection from the perimeter once Towns comes back. It'll be good to see him operating in the, you know, outside the arc, similar to what Gorgie's been doing a lot of recently. And, you know, Gorgie's done a great job overall, not specifically in this game, but to see Towns out on the perimeter is going to be, you know, just a bit more dynamic. And the Towns pump fake and drive, the Towns, you know, passing to back cutters is going to be a little bit more scary for opposing defenses than Gorgie and Noah Vonleh. So hopefully Culver keeps playing at the same level of activity, and it does seem like things are really starting to click for him. The second star for this game for the Wolves is Robert Covington. He had 18 points, 4 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 assists, a block. A night after getting, I think it was 6 steals against the Rockets, or 2 nights after, he got 3 steals in 30 minutes in this one. He shot 6 of 13, 4 of 9 beyond the arc. So he's starting to ramp up the volume of 3-point shots again, which is great. We'll talk about his potential trade prospects here in a moment, but I'm sure the Wolves wouldn't mind it if he bumped that 3-point shooting percentage up here a little bit just before the trade deadline. The three steals were key. He was good defensively early in the game. It was another, the Wolves got their hands in passing lanes early. They did end up with 10 steals in this game and turned the Thunder over 15 times. It's basically, if they weren't getting a steal, they were allowing second chance points or open 3-pointers. And that was the biggest issue. And Covington was okay defensively, but he was certainly part of the breakdown on the perimeter in this game as well. Instead of picking a third stud, we're going to talk about a couple of guys who had mostly solid games, but were a huge part of the defensive and rebounding struggles. Shabazz Napier had 16 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, no turnovers in this game in 27 minutes, 3 of 5 beyond the arc. So he was solid overall. However, he was 1 of 5 inside the arc, struggled in the paint. He missed a technical free throw early in the game when it was a close game. I guess it was early in the first quarter, so obviously it was a really close game. He struggled mightily on defense. The 5 rebounds in 27 minutes are fine for him, but the defensive struggles were at least partly on Napier in this one. So he definitely deserves some recognition for that 3 of 5 and the 4 assists and no turnovers. But the defense was an issue. Also, Naz Reid, we have to shout out his career high 20 points. He was 7 of 13 from the floor, 4 of 8 beyond the arc. He had that hot streak where he hit three threes in a row, or maybe 3 out of 4 in the third quarter. But he was playing center exclusively, played 18 minutes, and had one rebound in the entire game for Naz Reid. He committed 4 fouls in 18 minutes. He continues to struggle with fouling. For as big as he is, he's clearly not used to that. He's much more comfortable on the perimeter. And Steven Adams is arguably the most physical big man in the league. Naz Reid understandably struggled with him. He did draw a couple of fouls, but he also fouled Adams a couple of times, was pushed off the block. I don't think he even really tried to post up Adams. He did have at least one post touch. And he's been solid down there when he's gotten the ball, but he just doesn't offensive rebound, and he hasn't defensive rebounded either. And that's been a big issue. So that's the biggest red flag for Naz Reid. Clearly he can play in this league from an offensive perspective. He's got pretty good passing touch, and he's active. He knows where to be, understands the offense. He understands spacing, and he absolutely can space the floor. I mean, he's likely an above average 3-point shooter. He's been pretty streaky so far, but clearly is dangerous from deep, clearly can score in the post against smaller players. It's just a matter of his activity level on the glass and ability to get rebounds against physical front courts. And that's a little bit of a concern moving forward. All right, in terms of duds, we're going to call out Andrew Wiggins for the second straight game. After having just a really strong performance against Portland last Thursday, Wiggins has put together two duds. He scored, I think he had 8 points in the first quarter, 2 points after that in this game, 4 of 12 for the game, en route to 10 points, 0 of 3 beyond the arc, and 1 rebound in 31 minutes. That's worse than Naz Reid's 1 rebound in 18 minutes. With Wiggins' athleticism, the amount of time he was on the floor, you got to stumble into more than 1 rebound in 31 minutes. And this harkens back to pre-Tom Thibodeau firing Andrew Wiggins over 12 months ago. I mean, since then, he's rebounded the ball. I bet, and I haven't gone back through the game log, but I bet if we do, he's got less than 3 games with one rebound since Ryan Saunders took over at the midway point or around the midway point of last season. Rebounding has not been as big of an issue because of the importance that activity level and hustle and effort plays into rebounding numbers. Wiggins has played hard for Ryan Saunders, and this was an example of a game where he just wasn't all in. 1 rebound, he had 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, only 1 turnover, team worst minus 22 in 31 minutes. The shooting's one thing, the lack of rebounding is atrocious. It's really unacceptable for Andrew Wiggins, and both Wiggins and Naz Reid were a huge part of the rebounding issues. They each had 1 rebound in this game. That's a combined 49 minutes of gameplay and 2 rebounds from the Wolves' backup center and their most athletic, dynamic player who played 31 minutes. And that's not how you win a game. And that's exactly how you get out rebounded 51 to 37. You give up 7 offensive rebounds. That's how that happens. And that was a huge problem in this one. Also call it Gorgui Dieng a little bit. I mean, again, when Gorgui has a bad game, it's usually not because he really has a bad game. It's just because he has a quiet game. And also when the Wolves allow 20 rebounds to a wing player and 11 rebounds in 29 minutes to Steven Adams, and Steven Adams has such an efficient, you know, 5 of 7 game en route to 13, 11 and 5. It's important to note who is on the court most with Adams. There was a lot of Naz Reid matching up with Adams, but still, I mean, Gorgui only played 16 minutes in this game, but he also only had 5 points, 4 rebounds, was 2 of 7 from the field, committed 4 fouls in those 16 minutes. So he struggled a little bit with Steven Adams, which is understandable. Not a full, give him a full dud for this one either, because I think he was okay. It's just the Wolves trailing wanted to go with Naz Reid's dynamic offense, pull Adams away from the rim, clearly was the idea, to allow some of the other players to penetrate and score without Adams in the paint. Unfortunately, Napier wasn't as willing to do that. He struggled when he got into the paint. There were a couple occasions where he got basically to the rim and was intimidated by Adams' presence and just kind of backed it out. Andrew Wiggins struggled in the paint. Robert Covington didn't try to get into the paint. Jarrett Culver was really the only guy who got into the paint with any regularity and success. And so having Reed pull Adams away from the rim is great, but if nobody else on the team can actually get in there and score, then it doesn't really matter. All right, next up, we're going to stop talking about this game. This game's over. It's done with. The Wolves have a couple games against the Pacers this week, a home-and-home series. They are home against the Pacers Wednesday, then go to Indiana on Friday. Indiana's been better than expected. Everybody thought they'd be a playoff team, but Victor Oladipo, you know, of course, didn't play for the whole first part of the season. He's coming back, and they're in a great spot in the Eastern Conference. So we'll preview the Pacers game on Wednesday. Our last segment today, I wanted to get into some more Robert Covington trade rumors. More speculation, I guess, than you know, legit rumors, I guess, but they're from national guys who know people and you know, have some additional intel on a potential Covington move. So we're going to catch up on that next. We've been talking about Robert Covington as a potential trade chip since the summer, and more urgently, I guess, since probably about mid-December, you know, that December 15th unofficial start to trade season. So it's been maybe a week or so since we've talked about it here on this podcast. There haven't been any concrete rumors, but here in just the past couple of days, there's been a couple of things that have come out that point to the level of calls that the Wolves are likely getting about Covington. First, The Athletic had an article from Sam Amick, who's a national reporter for The Athletic, and he went through a list of some of the bigger names, the 16 big names that could move before the deadline. So Andre Drummond, Aaron Gordon, Marcus Morris, Kyle Kuzma, guys like that. Covington is one of the guys that he mentions and talks about the Wolves are, quote, trying to find upgrades, as one GM puts it, is what he says. So there's a GM who spoke to him, said the Wolves are trying to find upgrades. And he talks about Covington being the guy to try and help aid that cause. Side note from myself, we've talked about this at length here. It's going to be really hard for the Wolves to trade Covington and get back equal value today. It's likely going to need to come in the form of, you know, maybe some upside guys, maybe a solid rotation player and a pick. There's a proposed trade by another writer here we'll get to in a minute. That's a perfect example of that. That also is what makes me think the Wolves do not trade him by the deadline. I think Minnesota looks at Covington and says, well, if we do what we want to do this summer, he's a perfect fit for our roster for the next 2 years, the prime of his career, affordable contract. He's the perfect role player, the perfect 3-and-D player to fit with Towns and maybe Wiggins and another true star. And I don't think that Gerson Rosas is going to believe that he gets requisite value back for Robert Covington. This article mentions the Lakers taking a long look at Covington. We've covered that here at Lockdown Wolves. Seems pretty unlikely unless the Wolves really like Kyle Kuzma. The Lakers don't really have any draft picks at all to trade and no legit talent to trade that would help match salaries in this trade except for Kyle Kuzma. And unless the Wolves really feel like there's some additional upside there, it just doesn't make a ton of sense unless the third team gets involved. So I would disagree with that being a realistic option from the Wolves' perspective, although I get why the Lakers are interested. And then Amick also mentions Jeff Teague as somebody who will likely draw interest because of his expiring deal and the potential to add punch to any playoff team. And we talked about that. I do think Teague's traded, and I don't think it's for much. So my prediction as we sit here today, and we're roughly 3 weeks out from the deadline on February 6th, and I'll repeat this as we get closer. I don't think Covington gets traded ultimately, but I think that there's probably going to be a lot of decent offers that are kind of leaked out there that we hear about. I do think they trade Teague, and I don't think they get much for him. It's probably a second rounder and maybe a future second round pick and an upside player or a rotation guy on an expiring contract or some sort of mishmash of things. The Wolves, it makes no sense to not trade him. The Wolves would likely just, assuming they're further out of the playoff race here in a couple weeks, you know, Jordan McLaughlin plays backup point guard, or maybe they get somebody back in a trade to fill those minutes for the remainder of the year. Or maybe Jarrett Culver plays some more point guard, which I don't think he's necessarily best suited for, but it does give him some good opportunity to continue to develop his skills as a distributor here at the NBA level. The one concrete thing kind of sort of that's out there, I guess, is from Sean Devaney at Forbes. And he wrote a Celtics-centric piece talking about the potential for the Celtics to make a trade and the value of, they have Memphis's 2020 pick. It's top six protected, which at this point, that's kind of, you know, we don't know. Memphis is kind of floating around that range. It's possible that it doesn't convey. And if it doesn't convey this year, then it turns in to an unprotected pick next year, which of course there's a possibility that Memphis gets better, or if they get worse, then the pick's worth even more than it is this year. So it's correctly identified in this article as a volatile asset that, you know, ideally the Celtics, they probably don't want to trade it because it does have higher value than other picks that they possess. So we'll see what that could potentially turn into. But basically this article is a look at what the Celtics could do with the Memphis pick, or what they might be able to do without trading the Memphis pick, which they obviously would like to hang on to. So the proposed trade, and to be clear, this is from Devaney and not necessarily something that has actually been offered by the Celtics. But the idea here is that the Celtics would want to acquire Covington for all the reasons we've discussed at length here at Locked On Wolves. He's in his prime. He's a 3-and-D player and has a couple years left on his deal at reasonable value, really reasonable value, really. $11 million this year, combined $25 million over the next couple of years. Boston in this scenario would give up Enes Kanter and Daniel Theis, a couple of big guys, a couple of really backup big guys. Kanter's got a player option for next year. Theis has a year left on his deal. So they both are guys that the Wolves could have some interest in. I mean, Theis is actually a really good fit next to Towns. He's just more of a backup than he is a starter. He started 33 games for the Celtics this year and has played almost 22 minutes a game. And depending on who else is on the Wolves, he's actually not a terrible fit now, just from a, you know, if Covington's traded out, you could fit Theis next to Towns for the rest of this year and try and decide if he's a starter or a backup. He's mostly played center, but at 6'8", I think he's actually not a bad fit with Towns. Towns would effectively, you know, he would guard the bigger players undoubtedly, but Towns would basically play the four, would be in more of that stretch role, whereas Theis would be the pick and roll guy, or an option in the pick and roll. And he's a really good defender for his size. And he can shoot the three. He's 33% for his career, although he's shooting 28% this year. So he's actually not a bad fit next to Towns. Likely he becomes the backup four if he's in Minnesota, or the backup kind of swing big man. But that's exactly the type of trade that the Wolves could choose to make. I'm sure this won't be the only one that's out there, where they can get a guy with a little bit of upside who's probably a rotation guy. Plus they can get a mediocre to bad pick. So this would be a late first round pick. So it depends on Rosas's, if he's calculating, would you rather have Covington for the next 2 years when, you know, the Wolves are going to, they want to compete. They want to be a playoff team next year. They certainly want to be a playoff team within 2 years once Towns is a couple years into this deal. So does it make sense to trade a positive asset like Covington for some assets that might turn into something better, but likely won't? And my bet is no. I don't think the Wolves are going to be forced into this. There's no reason to give up Covington for at best likely neutral assets for the, you know, the one in 20 chance that whoever they pick at the end of the first round is a better player than Robert Covington, which is, that's maybe being a little generous in terms of the odds. So I'd be surprised if a trade like that happens, but that's the sort of thing that's going to be out there. And Rosas will have a few of those to choose from. It's not just going to be limited to the Celtics or basically, you know, Kyle Kuzma from the Lakers. There's going to be some options, and he's not going to be forced into a move just because some of the media feel like he, you know, Covington's an obvious trade, a guy who obviously could be traded, and he's a very tradable asset. And unless Rosas can really get a bidding war out of this, which he may be able to do, to be clear, I'm not saying Covington will not be traded. I just don't think he'll be traded for this kind of mishmash of assets that might be better than Covington, but probably aren't. I just don't think that Rosas is going to be forced into that. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. We're going to talk tomorrow about obviously any other rumors that come up between now and then, but also at length about the Wolves-Pacers matchup, as there's two of those still this week in the home-and-home series, Wednesday and Friday. But that will be the focus of Wednesday's podcast. Thanks once again for listening to Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.